Welcome to Made Not Born, a podcast about learning to lead. I'm your host, Alison Chadwick. I'm a leadership coach, so I'm fascinated by what great leadership looks like now and what it takes to get there. Because it rarely just happens. Great modern leaders are mostly made, not born. They learn how to lead on a journey of successes, struggles, and sometimes a little help from coaches like me. And the lessons they learn are often helpful to hear. So I'm talking to some inspiring leaders about their made not born journeys and some of the valuable lessons they've learned and are still learning along the way. These are conversations, not coaching sessions, but I think you'll still find plenty of useful fuel for your own made not born journey or to share with anyone you know who's learning to lead. In this first conversation of the new series, I'm talking to the brilliant Natalie Graham, co-founder of Uncommon Creative Studio. In this episode, we'll learn about the secret sauce of Natalie's successful partnership with co-founders Niels and Lucy, why momentum matters, and how to get rid of a mouse problem. But first, let me tell you a little bit about her. Natalie is an inspiring and dynamic modern leader with an impressive track record. She rose rapidly through some of the most creative ad agencies in the world, including Fallon, Mother, and 180 Amsterdam. Natalie's pre-Uncommon years then culminated in 3 years as Managing Director of Grey London, through the most profitable and awarded years in its long history. And the rest, as they say, is history. In 2017, Natalie co-founded Uncommon alongside her equally talented partners Niels Leonard and Lucy Jameson. And their success since then has been extraordinary, perhaps even legendary, with a client list to envy, meteoric growth, including expansion into the Nordics and New York, and a string of prestigious awards, including Ad Age's International Agency of the Year. Uncommon have genuinely broken new ground and done so with amazing flair. From coffee pods to feature films to their Grand Prix winning campaign for BA, they're at the restless vanguard of modern brand building. And Natalie truly embodies this flair. Every time I see her, I'm inspired by the energy, talent and drive this remarkable woman role models as a leader, a mentor and industry innovator. So I'm just delighted to kick off this new series of Made Not Born by talking to her about her fascinating and impressive leadership journey. Welcome to the podcast, Natalie. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you so much for that introduction.
It's all true. And let's just start with your early years into leadership. I'm restless to get to the leadership story quickly. And you had quite a traditional start, I think, didn't you, at Darcy and then on from there. What did you start to learn about what it takes to get the best from others, maybe from people who led you?
It's so wonderful to be having this conversation because actually I don't think I spend enough time thinking about leadership. Just as a phrase, I think it's not necessarily something that I've paused and actually given proper time to think about. But when I think back to those early days, it sounds a bit bonkers saying it, but I'm not entirely sure that I was surrounded by people who were trying to get the best out of people. It just wasn't something that was a presence growing up in the industry. So I had some incredible people who really were trying to help me progress, but very often it was in the guise of, well, help me be promoted and then you'll be promoted. Almost do two jobs and then you'll obviously get promoted on top of that. Great for my rise, but I'm not sure at any point was I really conscious about leadership styles.
That makes perfect sense. One of the things that characterises your journey is you rose very quickly through the ranks. Your potential was obviously spotted. Often where that rapid rise happens, it's partly because people say, go on, you do it, have a go. Did you feel trusted?
I did feel trusted. I think, unfortunately, those early years were all captured by fear, quite hierarchical structures. And I think that was typical of most businesses at that time. There was a lot of use of war terminology and what have you as to I'm leading over the hill and this is how it works and hierarchy. And so I didn't know any different. That was my first proper job. But it was very much driven by fear. Now, reflecting back, I don't think you get the best out of anyone with a culture of fear. I don't think you can be creative when you are fearful of what else is happening. And the role of a leader certainly is to remove those demons and things that people will be fearful of so that they can concentrate on bringing their best selves to the task. But then it was very much, I didn't want to get shouted at. And I wanted to do the best job. I was a bit of a people pleaser, and yes, I was trusted, but I also had a few lucky bounces as well that meant that spaces opened up. I worked at places that were growing incredibly fast.
From the story you were just telling there, Natalie, I think my underlying pen would go under that piece around fear. I could not agree more that there's no role for fear. Not for the kind of fear that makes people dread being shouted at or dread being fired. In fact, neuroscientists show that if people are afraid, all of their capacity is going into the survival mechanism, which is fantastic if you're being chased by a tiger. Yes. That's what you need.
Yeah.
But if you're in a meeting or you're trying to come up with a creative idea, then it literally shrinks your capacity to function effectively.
It's interesting because when I think about my journey from a leadership point of view, because I rose quite quickly, it was quite instinctive as to how I took on my leadership style. And I just looked around me. But because I'd grown up in the industry with this culture of fear, I thought that's how you got things done, because I thought that's how it worked. And I hadn't been exposed to other types of leadership. And so it was only when I moved companies, and I did move quite a lot in my early career, that I started to realise that wasn't actually getting me to the right solutions.
The playing out, the mimicry, it's what most of us do. All we have to learn from is the people who led us.
Yeah.
What was the cost, do you think?
I think I was known as a bit of a change agent, which wasn't necessarily a bad thing. So if that was seen to be a positive, and I was the one that was going to get things done, and I could spot stuff and... So hugely trusted roles, and that was very exciting. At the same time, I'm not entirely sure I was liked by a lot of people. And whilst that didn't necessarily bother me, ultimately, there was a cost in terms of my ability to hone my leadership style that would be more sustainable when you're not just looking at a task-based version of leadership or management versus how to get the best out of people. And there was an awful lot of micromanaging because you're the expert at it. And certainly when it's a big task and there's a big team, that can feel like leadership, but it's not. And I think that's the difference.
It's a brilliant thing to say. It can feel like leadership, but it's not. One of the things that I talk with my clients about is the difference between leading and managing. And when you're leading, you need to elevate above and look at the fact that you create the weather. And the task is the people. It's the human relationships, people's ability to come and bring their best to you, the culture that you're creating for them to thrive in every day.
Absolutely. We're a talent-based industry. And I think we forget that. And we forget it at our peril. And so if you're not trying to get the best out of the team, and if you're not creating the culture and the support that allows them to be their best, then honestly, it shows up in the work.
Yeah, I love that. Just staying with your made, not born journey, learning to lead. There's this sense of doing really well and succeeding, but not being so conscious of yourself as a leader and there being perhaps collateral damage. And God bless you as such a successful leader for bringing that honesty to this conversation. It's tremendously helpful because part of what I'm passionate about doing with this podcast is showing that you can be an incredibly successful leader like you and human and have had struggles and things that you had to figure out along the way. So I think that's a wonderful example. So when you think about that arc, what was the point where you think I need to be a bit more intentional about my leadership?
It was at Grey, an incredible time to be there because it was becoming an agency of note. But previously, there was a bit of a joke that it was the place you went to die. It was definitely not seen to be one of the most highly creative places. It was a bit of a step change. I'd been at Mother just before that. And so to move to Grey, I wasn't entirely sure what I was going to come across. And what I stepped into was an incredible bunch of people who hadn't necessarily realised the power of what they could do. They really believed in themselves, and the leadership there was really helping them believe in themselves, which is what was so remarkable. But they hadn't necessarily been able to show the world what they were capable of. I have a little bit of a chip on my shoulder generally. And so that felt really like my band of people and a really good time to be there. And ultimately led the whole team to great creative and commercial success, which was phenomenal to see and a really great time. But I think that was the turning point for me because I went from running a team as a managing partner where I could be across it all. But that's not a healthy relationship with work, ultimately. And it was actually Nils and Lucy who put the trust in me to become the managing director, but also spotted that I had this tendency to be limiting myself by trying to get across it all. And actually, by moving into the MD job, which at that time was about 250 people, but we grew to 550 people, of course I wasn't going to know everything. I think sometimes leadership can be conflated with needing to know everything and it being seen as a weakness that you don't know everything. But actually to admit I don't, and that there are other people who spent incredible amounts of time on a problem. And it's that great Obama quote, isn't it, of actually when it comes to you, it's a 51-49 decision. So you've got to pick a hill. And the role of the leader at that point is to pick a hill, not to try and do the task for them. And that was the flip for me.
Yeah, I love that. So many leaders become so attuned to the fact that their value is about doing and knowing. Number one, you can't be across everything. But also, I think what you need to realize is that your value is shifting. Your value is about getting the best out of other people and creating results through a gang. rather than doing it all yourself. There's a wonderful TED talk that I send to anybody who will watch it by Linda Hill about leading a creative organization. And she talks about the shift from hero to host, the hero who knows all the answers, top down, rock star, to being the host where you're not trying to know all the answers. You're not trying to do everything yourself, but you're creating the conditions for excellence to thrive around you. And it's absolutely, like you were saying, it's a kind of light bulb, penny drop moment. And it's exciting, actually. It needs to feel like you're not letting go of something, but you're embracing something.
Absolutely. But it's a very different style. And it can feel very exposing because all of a sudden you don't know it all and you can't hope to know it all. But that's actually the fun bit.
One of the things that can really help is being clear about, well, what kind of leader am I? So when you think about that slightly more intentional moment for you, what strengths do you think helped you find that identity as a leader?
Momentum is my big thing, partly because if I can get passionate about something, I feel like I can get other people energetic about it and I can rally the gang. And we sometimes call it a bus driver. Someone's got to drive the bus. Someone's got to point us all in the right direction and say, come this way with me. And hopefully that's infectious in a good way, that people actually realise that's something they can get on board with too.
Infectious is a brilliant word. In culture, I think in organisational cultures, good things are infectious and also bad things, aren't they? And I think particularly through tough times when people are struggling and they tend to look at what's not being achieved, etc. It's an absolute gift to have a leader who is able to say, come on, we're getting there. This is what we're achieving and let's keep going.
I think it comes with a focus of where you're heading. So you can be a bundle of energy, you can be a tigger, and that's wonderful and that's delightful to be around. But from my point of view, I felt that actually being clear about the focus of where I wanted to go. So the things I wasn't going to shine a light on. When I was at Grey, there was a mouse problem. It was eating people's lunches. It was quite a problem. And there were many emails that kept being sent round about this mouse problem. And then when I stepped into the MD role, a couple of months later, someone who'd left said, oh, I heard you got rid of the mouse problem. And I said, no, I just didn't send an email about it. So I think some of this is also about picking the things you're going to get people to focus on.
So the mouse is still there.
The mouse is probably still there.
These are such helpful lessons to share, Natalie. Thank you. And I know those are very much natural strengths for you in the way you lead. So momentum matters, clear points of focus matter. What else have you learned on your journey about what it takes to galvanise a team effectively?
I'm not very good at doing this, I'll be honest, but I think it's so important to celebrate as a team and to acknowledge reaching those milestones and reaching those goals. And we are a little bit rubbish about celebrating those milestones. I think it's too easy to move on sometimes if momentum is your thing. So always having someone in the team who helps you focus on, actually, you know what, we need to celebrate this goal we've achieved.
One of the tips that I sometimes give leaders as a coach is remember to praise on the path. Sometimes the goals can be long-term and amazing, and if you achieve them, there is much to celebrate, and it's very important to do that. But sometimes the achievement of those big things is a little bit beyond our control, but many good things can be achieved along the way. There's an interesting Harvard piece about the journey of the scientists in the 60s who discovered DNA and their diaries where they talk about days where they made progress and celebrating that progress and days when they didn't, and the sense of difference to their energy. So things like small beats of progress and big moments of celebration actually have a very powerful impact.
They absolutely do. You have to drive them into your day and in the way you come together as a team. But it can be really rewarding for everyone to realize the progress that you're making. I think as a leader, ultimately, people want to see that the sum is greater than the parts. And as a leader, particularly as you're scaling as an organisation, as we are at Uncommon, it's so important that you take a moment to reflect on everything that everyone's doing and how that comes together. Because sometimes when you are moving fast, so it's the role of the leader or the leadership to help the team see quite what they're achieving together. Important to celebrate and important to have fun as a team and get to know each other as humans. That can be by getting on well with your colleagues and feeling supported by your colleagues, but it can also be about the depth of actually why are we showing up? What are we trying to do here? And what sort of dent do we want to make in the world as a result? So what's going to shift as a result of how hard I've worked today? And I think personally, that's what I love about what I'm trying to build at Uncommon, is ultimately about trying to create a space where people can see the impact of the work that they're doing.
I think what you're saying is huge and so central to modern leadership. You know, seeing this amazing younger generation coming up with their activism and their appetite to make a difference and contribute. I'm personally so inspired by it. And I think looking around and seeing where organisations like Uncommon are getting the best out of young talent is so inspiring. I think that if you create the conditions for people to feel that they are, I love your phrase, shifting the dial, and that they can see how they're contributing to it, you unlock excellence. And in a way that makes people feel personally motivated. So let's use this moment to really unpack your secret sauce at Uncommon. In your short life as a company, you have become pretty legendary for the quality of the work that you're consistently delivering, and also for the restlessness that you're bringing to the industry and challenging the way that you show up to your talent contracts, challenging the way that you show up to client relationships. There's so much energy and innovation in there. And it's been like that right from the start. So obviously everybody's going to be fascinated by what's the secret sauce. I'd love to start by talking about you, Nils, and Lucy as a partnership. How do you help each other thrive, and how do your different superpowers interact to make this potent culture come alive?
Well, it's a really good question. I think we are very different. All three of us are very different. And obviously it definitely helped that we worked together at Grey previously. We all know each other's superpowers, but also our weaknesses. And I think, if I'm honest, that's probably the secret sauce of our partnership, the ability to spot when each other might be exposed or has stuff going on at home, and the importance of being honest with each other. We use candor an awful lot across the organization, making sure that people do feel like they can be honest about how things are feeling, whether something's good enough, back to that excellence point. But for Nils, Lucy and I think we're very candid with each other about the standards we set for each other and for the company, and what we personally want out of this journey that we embarked on 6-7 years ago. And we've been through a lot together. We leapt off a cliff together, and I think doing that without any certainty can feel quite unsettling and exposing. And we obviously took a big risk together, but I think it bonded us together even more. And it made us determined to answer the frustrations that we'd had about how the industry was working. So I don't think you take a big bet like this and not shift the dial.
Mm. I'd love to just take a little underline to that word candid, because, again, one of the things that I am very passionate about as a coach is helping people walk away from a conversation like this, for example, that they're listening to, or a coaching session, with something they can use immediately. And one of the things that creates a high-functioning leadership team, or any kind of team, is the ability to be candid with each other, disagree effectively. Many teams really struggle with how to do that because they either avoid it completely or they're too clumsy and end up hurting each other's feelings. So it's helpful to shine a light on this aspect of your relationship. And if we were to keep the light on it for a minute more and look at how you achieve that day to day, how have the three of you learned to be candid with each other in ways that help you thrive as a team?
It's like any relationship. And I think to see leadership relationships or management relationships differently, I think, is a mistake. So hopefully we show up as humans. And we try to be human and kind in the way that we talk to each other. Equally, we do have some quite blunt conversations, and sometimes it is quite explosive. But I think that's part of a healthy relationship, is the ability to say things and recover from it. It's never personal. And I think we respect each other hugely. And as a result, we create the space for each other to continue to learn and develop. And our ambitions are bigger than the three of us. And we've never, ever felt that it should ever just be the three of us. We've always felt like we needed a wider team and wider expertise and brilliant other talent to join us. Hopefully creating that space for each other to grow, but also for other people to be part of it.
What I'm feeling in that answer is the presence of your shared ambition as part of what creates that space.
Absolutely. I think we were very clear. You have to be when you leap off the cliff to do something like this. And even in the way we wanted to show up, so we wrote something called the On Contract, which was a promise to ourselves, if anything else, of the places we wouldn't go. It's on the wall, not because we're a cult, but because we want people to hold us accountable to it. And it has changed over the years in terms of actually what should be in that contract. But ultimately, we do want people to be calling each other out on it. So back to that word candid, it is a spirit of Uncommon where we feel that it's everyone's responsibility to create the culture. It's also everyone's responsibility, therefore, to call it out when it's not working. And when we're moving that fast and we're as growing and as big as we now are, the three of us definitely can't be spotting all of that. And so we want everyone to feel like they are able to create the company they want to show up to every day.
Yeah, it's such a helpful thing. I think sometimes very cool organisations, and I would describe Uncommon as very cool, there can be a sort of mythology around, oh, we shouldn't put things on the wall, or it's all a bit, I don't know, corporate or whatever. But actually, it's enormously helpful to people to codify who are we trying to be and how can you show up to that effectively. The wonderful Brené Brown says clarity is kindness. And I think sometimes in very creative organisations, it's a little bit too chaotic. People just have to figure it out instinctively, and that can be unproductive, but also exhausting.
And I think when things are uncertain, and particularly when there's huge growth, it's so important to be clear about where you're pointing and why you're pointing in that direction. And the people that align with that vision, hopefully that's what fulfills them, that they rock up to make the best work of their career, that they're hopefully shifting the dial on important issues. We always talk about the idea of setting a vision but leaving a hole in it, enough for other people to bring their own ideas to it. And certainly as we're expanding geographically, so into the US and other places, it's so important that we're not dictating that culture to be one note. Otherwise, it will only ever be the Nils, Natalie and Lucy show, and that's not what we set out to do.
Mm. That's so interesting listening to you talking about that, Natalie, because what's emerging through this conversation is this really lovely balance between your restless energy, your clarity of vision, your sense of momentum and ability to drive things forward, but also the space that you really see that you need to create and want to create for other talent.
Yes, and I don't always get it right, but ultimately, I think that excellence has to be something that everyone aspires to, because I've got my own standards and hopefully I lead by example on what those things are and how I would do it. And the thing I constantly am still teaching myself is the fact that I don't know all the answers, and I might have my answer, but actually it's great to be able to hear that diversity of thought from a wider team, because they're probably going to get somewhere better than I would have done on my own. And that's why we're all together. This isn't about just putting bums on seats and trying to monetize them. It's about casting. It's about people's whole lives. And if they aren't able to achieve the best in their day, then they're not going to be able to get to the answers.
Absolutely. Do people feel that they are valued, understood, able to bring their whole selves to work and then contribute to something they care about? And it's not easy to create that. And actually, going back to what you were saying about energy, I know you really role model being a leader with a lot of energy. How important do you think it is for leaders to bring positive energy into an organisation?
Energy is hugely important. And actually, David Patton, who was at Grey when I was there, and he was helping shift the whole of the energy of Grey, he said an amazing thing, which was, if you don't recognise that you are a leader, walk into the office one day and walk in with a positive mindset, and then the next day, maybe don't, and see the impact that has on the team for the day. And then you'll realise that how you show up really can affect the team. We're all only human. And sometimes it's far better to allow someone's energy to lag or recognise that they're in a dip and then wait for them to be their brilliant self when they've had a chance to have a rest.
I love that. And again, easy to say, but in a high-pressure client service industry, really hard to enact. So it's great to hear you bring that into this conversation and talk about how important it is from a position of such success and continued creative and commercial momentum. I think Gallup have recently discovered that 70% of the variance in engagement on a team is down to the impact of their leader. And I always say to my clients, treat that as an opportunity to show up and be that leader rather than as a terrifying responsibility. Because actually, it's not that hard to adjust your behaviours in a way that do have a positive impact on the team, bringing the smile into the meeting room, giving the reassuring note, etc. What do you do to make sure that you're able to bring your best self to work?
I don't get enough sleep, I'll be honest. I have ways of switching off. I love to go for a run. I think that helps clear my head. Family is really important to me. So a change of energy, not necessarily just complete rest. I think just being honest with myself. And I think that's something I've learned over time. Sometimes I'm still not very good at it, and I need those who love around me, either at work or at home, to point that out. But being more honest with myself about where my limitations are and where ultimately I'm not bringing the best energy into the workplace. And I think we all have days like that sometimes where it all just gets a bit too much. But I think I'd like to say I'm better. My team will tell me if that's not true.
It's, I think, a real sign of good modern leaders that they are able to admit that they have good days and bad days, and that none of us are superhuman. And that makes you actually far more inspiring, because you're relatable and you're also giving your team permission to be human. It's, I think, the amazing thing about being a dynamic, inspiring, energizing leader is you do inspire greatness in others if you are that kind of leader, as you are. And the risk of it sometimes is that other people can look at you and think, wow, I could never be that person. And so actually to just show that glimmer of real humanity and sometimes vulnerability is amazingly important to get the best out of other people. As we start to get towards the end of the conversation then, Natalie, one of the things I'd love to ask you about is, even in an amazing culture like Uncommon that you've built, these aren't easy times to lead through. There's a huge amount of restlessness, I think, still in the world. What are you particularly trying to pay attention to now that's helping you keep the momentum that you've managed to build?
Ultimately, I think it's about trying to set a vision for where we're heading, but not a straitjacket. Allow other people to bring their ideas as to what we could be. We don't see ourselves as just in the ad industry. That may be where I came from, but we didn't start an organisation to be like our parents. We want to create, we are a design agency already, we are creating feature films, as you mentioned, and ultimately being able to work with incredible people who have passions for those things and recognise those passions. And if it's more than just a hobby, if it could be a business, and if we do feel like there's an opportunity around that, then being able to recognise that in those individuals and for Uncommon to be a home for that, I think is hopefully a self-fulfilling prophecy in terms of attracting the best talent and being able to allow people to see that there doesn't have to be one way of coming at things.
I just think that's such a brilliant encapsulation of so much of what modern leadership is about. One of my mantras that I've taken to using over the last few years is the need to sit with the discomfort of uncertainty and lead anyway. And that's exactly what you just encapsulated. It's not about denying the uncertainties and the level of change out there, but it's about saying, it's okay, we're going to adapt and adjust as we go. And we're not quite sure where the end of the path looks like, but we are really clear about these things and who we want to be and how we want to work. And I just think you're role modeling that with such impressive clarity and energy, Natalie. It's extraordinary. So last question, if you had somebody sitting next to you who was rising as a leader, perhaps one of the people that you mentor, for example, what would you say to them is the most important thing you've learned about leading over the years?
Oh, goodness, what a tough question.
I know, I'm sorry.
To put it in a nutshell, I think it's about being aware that your energy versus your knowledge is the most important thing. Be mindful of the energy you bring to it, both positive, negative, and the velocity of it, and be comfortable with the fact that you don't need to know it all in order to lead.
Fantastic. So I describe you as an inspiring and dynamic leader, and you have brought that inspiration and that dynamism in spades to this conversation. Thank you so much.
Thank you for the opportunity.
I hope this episode has given you a little fuel for your own Made Not Born journey, whatever path you're on. If you've enjoyed it, please rate, review, share and subscribe to Made Not Born wherever you get your podcasts, and follow us on social media. And finally, if you'd like to know more about my leadership coaching practice, visit madenotborn.co.uk. Thanks for listening.